I can see it all so clear. Please believe me, I really had something to say. But now it's bye-bye to my thinking. Now that my thinking's gone, I got nothing to say. Determination, I know that I have got to persist. Just gotta keep on anticipating, 'cause it's so
welcome to Comic Pop Library. I'm Richard Berkman with co-host Mickey Cowell and Royce Kitts again for episode 3. Venus Roland is still under the weather, so she is still not going to be with us, but we will be looking at her book today, which is War at Ellesmere, and Mickey is going to be looking at Richard Stark's Parker, Hunter and Outfit. And just start it all off with, how are we doing, everybody?
Hey, Richard, how's it going?
Doing good.
Doing pretty good here.
What have you been reading or watching here lately? Anything good?
Well, I've been reading a book right now that's called Nemesis by Mark Miller. And, you know, it's kind of it's a take on the superhero, but instead of focusing on the superhero, it's focusing instead on the villain. So it's a nice change for me.
And that's kind of, isn't that fairly violent?
Oh, it's beautiful, and it's ultra-violence. That's what I think is so beautiful about this book, is just that no punches are pulled, and the absolute worst thing that this guy could do is exactly what he does every single time. You got to love those.
Are you familiar with that title, Mickey?
Yeah, it's one of those adult sort of ultra-graphic, ultra-violent things that Mark Miller's been producing. I think there's been sort of an enhanced market for adult graphic novels since Wanted. And so you've got Kick-Ass, you've got Nemesis, you've got these sort of ultra-graphic graphic novels that are, I think they're a little bit problematic for library collections, but I think that, you know, of course there's a niche for them, just right, as there's a niche for other kinds of fiction. I personally don't care much for them. I don't think they have much merit, but certainly if people enjoy them, that's fine with me.
I have to admit I liked Kick-Ass. I enjoyed it. Now, I haven't read any of the Nemesis, though. Mm-hmm. The concept I do like. I'm kind of like Royce. It's got a neat concept to it. On my end, I've been reading some stuff, but I'm just going to say I went and watched the Green Hornet movie. I don't know if you two have or not. If not, I can't say that I recommend it. I think it fell into that area where we discussed one time where it's either going to be good or it's going to be bad, and it's more on the bad side.
Even if you're a Seth Rogen fan, it's no good?
Oh, he plays it in such a way where he's trying to be a little bit grown up but still have the humor in it, mm-hmm. And it just, to me, it didn't work for me. Mm. The Kato, I can't remember who played him, he pretty much took the movie on his shoulders and carried it, and if it wasn't for him, the car would have taken the spotlight, so... Seth Green I kind of saw what he was trying to do, but it just felt odd with him being there. And if they do another movie, and I don't know if they will or not, I think he's going to have to get a little bit more serious in tone. Have you seen it, Royce, at all?
No, but you know, those money, they're going to keep making those movies because those movies make money in the first couple of weekends, you know, and all you really have to do is slap together a 30 to 60 second commercial and people are going to be hooked. You know, you're touching on subjects that people are really into. So Hollywood will keep making those movies as long as they're still able to bring in that money the first couple of weeks. And then when the DVD sales come out too. So
I think that's going to be its driving
force. More to come.
Yeah, DVD sales is going to be its saving grace, probably. What about you, Mickey? Are you doing anything? Or
No, I've been busy with other things, and I haven't been doing a lot of reading or movie viewing, but I did follow up on Venus's recommendation of War at Ellesmere with another book written by, or co-written by, Faith Erin Hicks, who's the author of War at Ellesmere, and it's called Brain Camp. It's a First Second book. First Second is an interesting publisher that has really sort of exploded in the past couple of years. They really do a quality catalog. They've got some really good stuff out there. And I was very curious about this one because I hear it is really popular with all ages and both genders. And so I took a read and I think I was mildly disappointed. It's got kind of a boy meets girl at camp, of a fall into a mysterious situation, solve a mystery through science, because these are all smart kids at this brain camp. And then there's a real kind of crazy science fiction plot twist about three quarters of the way through that involves alien life forms and what have you. So it's sort of a kind of a crazy YA all ages read called Brain Camp. That's a collaboration between Susan Kim and Lawrence Clavin and Faith Erin Hicks. It's an interesting book that I would certainly recommend in a qualified way, but it wasn't my favorite.
And I'll probably echo some of those things when we start talking about War of Ellesmere. Let's start with yours and get the party started.
Okay, sounds good. The selections that I wanted to talk about for librarians are a couple of books that I think anyone would easily add to their collections. They're both hardbacks. They're both published by IDW, which is an excellent comic book and graphic novel publisher. And they are both extremely high quality works with an adult bent. They are not particularly violent or have any kind of offensive material, so there shouldn't be any restriction on purchasing it for teens and above if you're looking for a graphic novel to add. The author is Richard Stark, and Richard Stark is a pseudonym for Donald Westlake, the noted grandmaster of mystery who just died at the end of 2008. Donald Westlake wrote a number of great books, a great series, mystery series. This is kind of his I'm not sure how to describe it. Maybe it's his playground, his mental playground. He dreamed up a character way back in the 60s named Parker. In fact, initially, he didn't even have a name. He only has the one name. And Parker is a criminal. He is a career bank robber. That's what he does. He's a tough guy. He's your sort of your classic loner who unfortunately needs to get involved with other people to pull off bank jobs because he's always looking for opportunities to rob banks or enrich himself in some way. He is, in the first couple of novels that Westlake wrote, involved with a gang or involved with coming up against an organization where he is marked for death by this organization. And the first two stories are about his sort of brutal retaliation against this organization, this criminal organization, and this sort of rough truce that he's able to set up between himself as a loan operator and the criminal organization. The graphic novels, though, are really interesting. They're both produced, and there are two of them now, based on Richard Stark's novels. They're both produced by a brilliant Canadian creator named Darwin Cook, who had left a really successful animation career to focus his energies on sequential storytelling and comics. He's been very successful, and Darwin Cook is something of an acquired taste, I'll tell you right now. He has been very much influenced by 1950s and 1960s advertising illustration, and so his art has a cartoonish quality to it that may be off-putting to some people. I think it is probably one of the most polished and elegant kind of design work that you get in comics these days. He obviously has an extremely sophisticated sensibility when it comes to color, layout, design. He's won numerous awards, but again, I'll be quite frank. I think he is an acquired taste, particularly for younger readers who may not quite know where he's coming from. He has a very retro sensibility that harkens back to the 50s and 60s, sometimes the early 70s, and that may be off-putting to some people. Once you understand where he's coming from and what he's trying to do, though, I think you really love his work. All the stories are set in the 1960s, 1962 and 1963. They are period pieces, and they're set usually in nice locales, big cities. The outfit, the second book, is set actually in Miami in 1963. But both of the novels, The Hunter and The Outfit, both of them are adaptations by Darwin Cook of Donald Westlake's novels, and both are very faithful adaptations in the sense that the dialogue is often reused in the word balloons verbatim, but there are also some experiments and some changes made by Darwin Cook that I think are great. For example, in the second adaptation, The Outfit, the character Parker goes through kind of a very complicated heist with some other people, and there is a long couple of chapters where basically Cook takes the prose right straight out of Westlake's novels and decides to spot illustrate the prose for a chapter or two instead of telling it in a panel-by-panel story. So he's not above doing those kinds of tricks, and he's not above trying to really stretch the medium. So what you get, I think, are really fascinating sort of insights into a creator's approach to adapting material for a graphic novel format. I highly recommend both of these adaptations. They're both, as I said, hardback printings, a very quality presentation. I think that any Donald Westlake reader would immediately gravitate towards these novels and the adaptations that Cook has done. I also think that they stand on their own as really well-done graphic novels. Whether you've read a Westlake Parker book or not, you'll be fascinated by the approach that Darwin Cook takes to graphic storytelling in a very noir way. And I know a lot of noir readers are out there, and I'm sure Royce will talk more about the whole noir genre with his Sinners graphic novel review, the Brubaker and Sean Phillips. But I think these are absolutely first-rate recommendations for any library to own. I think, again, as I said, you'll want to classify them for YA and above, mostly due to violence and some mild sexual situations. But the quality of the presentation and the creativity in the exploration of the of this sort of a hard-boiled genre by Cook is just top-notch. So highly recommended.
This is one where I torture Royce and with my manga. This is where you guys get back at me. I have to admit, this is not my favorite genre at all. I have to be in the right mood to be able to sit down and read this type of story. And I think the outfit, I think I read The Hunter and The Outfit. It took me about 3 weeks and I sat down and read it. It's not something to, well, how do I say it? It's not a leisure read per se. It's a little bit of a thinking man's book. I don't know if you see that, Mickey, or not. Or
I think it requires some concentration for sure. Yeah, it's not something you just sit down with over breakfast and sort of leaf through and you're done with it. It does require some concentration.
And the experiment, like you talked about in The Outfit, it was kind of off-putting to begin with, but it's sparse enough that it flows very nicely. It's not going to bog the story down like you would think it would, because you flip the page and, oh, a page full of text. And but once you start reading, it flowed very nicely. The artwork, it's not my favorite style either. I respect Mr. Cook and what he's doing and can appreciate it. But again, I'm a child of the 90s. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm so familiar with. And when that artwork changes, again, it's that adage that I have to be ready for it. Mm-hmm. So it takes me a time. I have to kind of look through the art, look through the book first. Once I get familiar with everything, then I'm ready to go. But it fits the story perfectly. It has the dark hues. I think they use the blue and blacks.
Yep, that's it. Just the blue and black all the way through.
And when I first opened the book, it's not so much on The Outfit, but on The Hunter. It's almost like I wish they would have kept that color palette throughout the whole story for me. Because it wasn't bright. It was more of a subdued color, if I remember. Venus has my copy at the moment, so I can't see it. But, you know, to me, that would have been easier for me to just jump right in, where with the way it is right now, I just had to kind of flip through it, get used to it, and then say, okay, this is the type of story. You mentioned the timeline set in the 60s. That also helped, because the artwork really reflects that time period, I think. For some reason, I don't know why, it just fit the novel.
Do you all remember that movie with Leonardo DiCaprio a few years ago called Catch Me If You Can? It was about a con man who lived in the 60s, and he passed himself off as an airline pilot and all sorts of different things. There's a certain flavor of that in this novel that you'll find. If you like that movie with DiCaprio and you like that sort of a kind of a Technicolor palette from the 60s, you'll get a sense of that or a flavor of that in both of these books. I think he captures the whole 60s ambiance really well.
You know, when I was reading this, you know, I especially when we're talking about The Hunter, you know, I think a lot of people think that I'm really much about superheroes, but my latest thing has really been this kind of gritty crime stuff, and I just love it. I love this world that he's created, where you know that there's like this kind of code and way that things are done, and yes, everyone involves a criminal in one way or another, But, you know, there's the good criminals and the bad criminals, and there's snitches, and there's just this whole world that's created. The artwork, I think, is, for me, you know, I just fell in love with this book. I think this is probably the kind of stuff that I'm going to start searching out more, as I think probably after reading this and then reading some of the other Brubaker stuff that I've read, I think my tastes have changed overnight. I really dig this.
And remind me if I'm wrong, you two, but I think IDW intentionally packaged it the way they did so it would reflect just like a novel sitting on your library shelf.
Well, I do recall that, you know, Darwin Cook had a lot to do with the design of the book as well, and he intended the publication to be as respectful of the original medium as possible. And he felt that one way to do that would be to do a hardback book in a standard format as opposed to a floppy or a trade paperback. And there was enough cachet around the project that they were able to, you know, spare no expense, basically, and produce this really high-quality hardbound book. So, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think IDW bought into that concept originally and said, sure, you know, we'll publish it just like any other hardback book. It's the same format and same size as any other hardback on your shelf, but it is a graphic novel through and through.
And this is one where, for us, we'll still classify it as a graphic novel, but I can see some libraries, if they wanted to put it in with their fiction, just to maybe have a surprise there.
I'd love that. People. I'd love to see more of that. I'd love to see more integration of graphic novels into the regular fiction section, so I hope that happens.
So that's
I think this would be a perfect book to do that. You know, I'm sitting here and when I'm thinking about the people that would be turned on by a book like this, I do think it's those people who are really into the mystery crime fiction, that kind of stuff. This is something that I'd want them to come across. So it's just wonderful.
So would you put it as a mystery fiction, then maybe put kind of like a large print label, put a graphic novel label as well, and just put it with your mysteries, you think?
Sure, I think that'd be an appropriate way to do it. I mean, you know, all the other Parker books are either on the shelf under Stark, which was Westlake's pseudonym, or under Westlake. So why not just put this book right with by Chow with the rest of them?
So that is a good cross-promotional tool, if nothing else, right there.
You know, that's, we all use the catalog. And, you know, that's the thing. If someone's looking for this graphic novel in the library catalog, you know, they'll find it. But, you know, I think placing it in with the fiction gives people that opportunity of accidentally discovering it.
Agree.
I'd like to thank one of our sponsors at this time, Music Alley from Mivio. Andrew Lubman's song, Train of Thought, was provided from Mivio's Music Alley. Check it out at music.mivio.com. That is MUSIC.MEVIO.com. Or you can go to our site, Comic Pop Library, for links to Music Alley and or Train of Thought by Andrew Lubman in our reference links located within our left navigation bar. And now, back to the show.
Well, I think with Venus's Choice, The War of Ellesmere, we're going to have to struggle through this. I talked to her briefly before we started recording so I can give some of her thoughts about it, and then we can dive into what we liked or did not like about it. And this is one area where having some teenagers in my house, which I'm pulling what little hair I have left out because of that, I can kind of give you some insights of what they thought about the book as well. Venus said she really enjoyed the book. She liked the story. The artwork appealed to her. It's very simple. And it was first a webcomic, I guess I should say that, War of Ellesmere by Felth Aaron Hicks. It was originally published as a webcomic, and then they put it out as a soft cover trade paperback. She really enjoyed the lead character, which I believe is Juniper or June. Mm-hmm.
Juniper's 13, yeah. She's a student at that boarding school.
Right. She said the humor that she brought to it, the cynicism that she brought to it, can't talk today, golly. She really could identify with that. So I think depending on where you're at when you're reading this, it will depend on who you identify in the story. Because I don't know about you guys, but me personally, and even my daughter, when she read this, we did not like the Juniper character. Did you guys have that same thing happen to you when you read it, or?
No, she struck me as a fairly archetypal, you know, outsider heroine, 13-year-old going into a strange environment in a really ritzy, rich, prestigious boarding school, doesn't know anyone, you know, picked on by the most popular girl at school. I thought it was a pretty straightforward, you know, setup for what happens in the graphic novel. So I was not put off by her character at all. In fact, I, of course, identified with her as I do often with outsider characters.
What about you, Royce? You're being awful quiet.
I am, mainly because, you know, Mickey and I talked about this book, and, you know, my I read it, you know, the artwork, I like the artwork, but, you know, it, for me, when I read it, it was a story that as soon as I got the setting and the characters, I knew where it was going, and for me, it was just some time out of my life that I'll never get back, unfortunately, but, you know, would I recommend it for some kids and teenagers to read? Oh, I think they'd love it, you know, they'd plow right through it like they do everything that's kind of in that genre.
It's definitely geared for the middle schoolers, I would say. I don't even know if high schoolers are getting into it a whole lot.
Younger high schoolers, you know.
Because I know, what was it? The person that my daughter and I identified with the most was June's roommate, Casey.
Sure. Casey's kind of a weirdo, let's be honest. She's kind of odd.
But it's one of those where it's an appealing odd to us. We kind of like that. Sure. She was innocent.
Ryan has some pathos with her, you know, the fact that she's sort of the neglected little rich girl, that kind of thing. Yeah.
So we enjoyed that. And of course, you have the evil group of girls as well that you're coming through with. You always have to have that in a private school setting, whether it's a boys' school or girls' school. You have your evil group. The one thing that really surprised me, and I didn't see coming, because I was like, really? And my daughter was the same way, was the ending of this book. We were expecting, because my daughter and I did discuss this after we had read it, and we were like, were you expecting something serious to happen? And we were expecting one of them to pass away.
Well, I don't want to give away the ending. I know you don't either, right. But basically the status quo is retained by the end of the novel, which was sort of a surprise. Something, you expect something a little more dramatic or climactic, and that's not what you get. You get a different kind of resolution entirely.
And it's just the image that we get at the end. It was too Disney-ish looking. I guess you could call it that. I don't know if you guys would agree with that or not. But it was kind of like, really? That's what's in the forest, really?
Well, I think we should defer this for one episode. And I'd like to hear what Venus has to say about it. I'd like to hear a different point of view on it. And I'd also like to hear her take on, you know, how the novel played out and what she specifically thought about the ending. So I hope we can do that, Richard.
I think she'd be willing to do that. But just to say, it would have been a more powerful novel because we were expecting, you know, like I said, somebody to pass away. And for a character to go through that, it would change the tone of the book completely. And I think it would put it into a little bit more mature level. And I think that might be one reason why the author went the way they went, maybe. I don't know. That's just how her and I felt about it. I'm with her, April, my daughter. But for a young middle school girl, I think they would enjoy it, depending on their likes and dislikes. You know, you guys identified with the Juniper character. My daughter and I identified with the Cassie character.
Cassie, yeah.
People will come away with different views from this, but I have to agree with Royce. It was pretty cookie cutter story. You knew where it was going pretty much from the start.
Well,
which
I think
isn't
that's
bad.
True. That's true of adult readers, particularly. I mean, we've read different things. I think it might be kind of fresh and new for a lot of teen readers.
True. So I'd definitely put it down in that area. If you happen to have a teen level within your library that you can slip it in, you could possibly, we have a children's level that goes up to sixth grade, and I think even fifth and sixth graders would like this as well.
I totally agree. I think it would be an ideal recommendation for a high reading sixth grader. Be great.
Anything else that you guys want to discuss? Like I said, we're kind of pulling double duty here with Venus not gone. I think you're right, Mickey. We need to have her kind of step in and briefly talk about it as well when she's able to join us.
Yeah, I'd love that.
After she hears this, she might beat us over the head. Ward Elsmere, I think age level appropriate, definitely. For adult readers, you know, it's cookie cutter, but I would say recommend it for 6th through probably 8th to 9th grade level. Unless you guys have a different opinion on that as well, I don't know. But we picked it up for our library. I have to admit that. What about you guys? You feel like that's where it should fall?
Yes.
Yeah, that sounds fairly accurate. You know, a lot of my kids, you know, they just see the new stuff sitting on the table and they're going to read it. You know, I don't really have to make any recommendations on it for them. So they'll tell me whether it's good or not. And I have a feeling that they'll read it and they'll say they'll like it. But, you know, I don't know if they'll be asking me if there's more to it than that. So.
And to go back briefly to Mickey's, I would have to say this is a very good purchase for the library. Both of them. The third one's due out, I think it said in 2012. Mm-hmm. Is that what it said? Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a long stretch in between. But I think if you can get it into the right hands, you can convert some people that aren't used to graphic novels. You might have to prod them a little bit. But I think once they would get into it, they would enjoy it for that genre. And we bought We bought copies for our library. I don't know about you guys. If you guys did, of course, Mickey, you're not at a library, so I guess you can't testify to that.
Yeah, but I see what everyone else buys, and I know it's been widely purchased by libraries big and small.
Yeah, and it's going into our collection here pretty soon. You know, one of the things is, I'm married, and my wife is an artist, and she's not really into graphic novels or comics. And in fact, she doesn't hold them to the same kind of value that I do. But one of the beautiful things about The Hunter here was, you know, when I run across a book like this, I can show her the artwork in it. And then there's glimpses of appreciation on her part for what some of these graphic artists are able to do. So, you know, I think there's The Hunter has appeal on a couple of different levels, not just that mystery crime story that a lot of our adults like, but even on a sort of an artistic level, especially with the early 60s feel to it, really popular amongst a lot of older adults. So it becomes this language, visual language that you immediately identify with if you're older. So I just think it's a wonderful book all the way around.
For adults, pretty much, I think, I think a higher high school level would be able to appreciate this as well. I don't know. What do you guys think? Or do you think it's primarily adults? I'd say it depends on what they're into, maybe?
It depends on the kid. It depends on the kid. All kids are different.
Right.
Some kids are, push themselves and are reading higher at a higher level than a lot of other kids. I would say if you run into a kid who's run out of stuff to read and they seem to like some of this other kind of stuff that's kind of in this genre, this might be something they enjoy. You pull in that movie angle like Mickey did earlier.
True.
With that Leonardo DiCaprio movie. You know, I think that's a good way to kind of illustrate to young adults what a graphic novel might be like is, you know, because a lot of them do watch movies, are familiar with certain, especially high-profile movies, and are able to make that instant connection with the book.
We try to do a new segment here where we give librarians some ideas of what they can do possibly within the library to foster interest in the graphic novel section, or whether it be a movie that's based on a graphic novel or whatnot. And we're going to take a couple of people and discuss them at the end of each episode. And Royce, you said you had some thoughts about one idea that you had.
Yeah, I don't know how often people look at their circulation stats, but if you're running a library, I'm sure you look at them all the time. And one of the things that we've been noticing is that our DVDs are being checked out at a much higher rate per title than our novels are. And one of the things that we've started doing is these movies that have graphic novel tie-ins, like Kick-Ass, for example, will display the DVD alongside the graphic novel and give people this instant recognition. You know, fortunately, Hollywood looks at these graphic novels as an easy way to make that transition into film. And so you have titles like 300. There's always going to be a lot of those sitting around. So we just kind of make some displays just to draw that in. You know, I'm always surprised. You know, I read a lot of these, and I'm always surprised when people don't realize that a movie that they really, really, really like is based on a popular graphic novel. So, you know, that kind of display idea of drawing the title in to movie adaptation, I think is really key. And it really seems to work.
And I think you mentioned about some people not realizing it. I think, I don't know if there's recent movies now that can really claim that, but I remember back probably about 10 years ago when Ghost World came out and the Tom Hanks movie. What is it, guys? Road to Perdition. Won some Oscars that year as well. And people just fall over saying that was a comic book. Were there any movies that you guys can think of that were kind of like that? Mickey, with you? Or I know Royce has mentioned some.
Well, I don't know. I kind of see movies and graphic novels as two distinct genres. I guess I'm like Alan Moore in that. I'm kind of grumpy about it.
You don't like the adaptations?
No, it's not that I don't like them. It's just I see them as two completely separate things. And so, you know, even though a movie may source a graphic novel originally, like Road to Perdition that you mentioned, it doesn't mean that they have anything in common, and they don't,
right,
in my opinion.
Well, some of them can do fairly decent. I think Watchmen was probably the most closely followed the graphic novel until the end.
Whoa.
It's been a while since I've read Watchmen.
Well, the problem with that, though, is they take out one of the biggest backstories in that movie.
Okay.
And I'm losing the title, obviously, The Tale of the Black Ship.
The Black Frigate, yeah. It's not even close.
They take out the part about the Owlman's biography that he's written that kind of outs all these people. And you know what? I liked reading The Watchmen. The thing that I liked about it was, you know, the violence. There's violence in it, but it made sense. Whereas when I watched the movie, I just felt like it was violence without any meaning. And I probably had made it 20 minutes into the movie before I was like, you know, this just isn't the kind of things that I like to watch when I'm watching a movie. So okay. I guess I disagree with you on that one.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, that's fine.
I usually don't have a strong opinion on anything.
But I think your idea of the cross promotion, you know, put in display with the graphic novel and the movie covers, you know, works.
Our job as librarians is a little bit different than our job as connoisseurs. My job is to make sure that when I'm purchasing materials that people know what we have.
Right.
And if people aren't into graphic novels, well, they're just not even going to go over there. So you have to take them out of where they're comfortable settings and put them in areas where people aren't expecting to see them so they can have that accidental exposure to them.
Well, my little tip is basically promoting again, but it's a little bit different outside the box for some libraries. Some will be able to do this, some won't. And I'm sure you guys will know what I'm talking about once it leaves my mouth. But for libraries to try to promote the comic book industry and get interest into the medium, you can get with your local comic book shops and see if you can purchase some things from them, and specifically this is for Free Comic Book Day, which is coming the first Saturday of May. So you still have a little bit of time. We do not have a local comic shop here. The closest one from us is 4 hours away, but we do have a relationship with one. Listen to me, a relationship. Each year for the past 3 years now, we've ordered some of the titles from Free Comic Book Day. We've gotten the little characters that they've put in. Like 1 year was a War Machine Heroclix. I think this year's is a Green Lantern Heroclix, which the Heroclix is a gaming RPG or role-playing game type system. These are not free to the stores, so they charge us the price of what they're being charged for, plus the shipping, so they get a little bit more. And we just set them out, and we get them actually the week after the event actually happens. So ours is actually Free Comic Week in our library. And throughout that week, you know, we limit the number of what they can take until we're down to the last few, or if some are stacked up, we'll say, you know, give these to your friends and whatnot. But it's one way that you can draw attention. They have comics from all ages available. They have the Archies, they have the Disney stuff, up to the Image, and Boom Studios, I think, has some stuff this year, as well as DC and Marvel. But that's one opportunity that is out there. We happen to use comic store in Wichita, Kansas, called Prairie Dog Comics. Royce, I know you mentioned when we talked one time that you use a local comic shop. I don't know if you want to mention their names as
well. Why not? You know, Astro Kitty in Lawrence, Kansas. Really nice guys that work there. My suggestion is that you ask them for a gift certificate, and the owner of that establishment will hand draw you a gift certificate, and he's quite the artist. So it's like getting a gift certificate, but you also get this piece of art.
Oh, that's cool. That'd be nice. They don't do that for us at Prairie Dog.
Well, you know, I all the kudos in the world go to Astro Kitty there in Lawrence, Kansas, because you know, they go above and beyond. As soon as he found out that I worked at a library, he was an excellent person to work with. And if you're ever in the area, it's a fun place to stop by. It's right there in downtown Lawrence, Kansas. So it's quite the fun place.
And it's a way you can promote their business for them. We buy graphic novels through them, and they ship them to us. So it's one way to help support local businesses, even though it's not completely local. It might be within your state. So if you happen to be in Nebraska or out in California, whomever, you know, you can possibly do mail orders. But this is just one way to give them a little bit of publicity, because some of these brick-and-mortar stores, like everybody else, they're hurting, and they would appreciate some business. And they appreciate anything that we can do for them. Mickey, do you have any recollection of any of your libraries trying to do a Free Comic Book Day promotional or anything like that?
No. I think one of our larger systems does, but, you know, that's all up to them, and some of them promote it, some of them don't. So, no, I don't know any more about it than you said.
And it's just one of those things that you can do to bring recognition to the medium. We are going to use them again this year. We have a pretty nice budget for our size of community, so we have some money in programming. So I just take a little bit out of that and purchase. That's how we're able to do that with them. And Roy, sounds like you got a great relationship.
Yeah, you know, I think it's one of those things where you cultivate it, you know, and you just talk about what you do. Yeah. And the thing about people who usually work in comic shops is they really like talking about comics.
That is true.
That's why they're there. And
spend about 30 minutes there and go, oh my gosh.
And I don't know a lot about comics, so I really rely on him to kind of give me a brief synopsis of what a title might be about. I think once you build up those positive relationships, you know, especially if you're going to go to like a convention or something, and you start to recognize those people and see those people more often, the deals start flowing, you know, so it's a good thing. Communicating with people is always a good thing to do.
Right. And we will have these on our website, which is comicpoplibrary.com, all one word, all lowercase. Visit us. We put blogs up every day. We try to. The weekend is a little bit of a break, but every day through the week we try to put stuff up that are more geared for librarians. Anybody's welcome to come visit us, though. We do have a Facebook page that you can like us on as well and get the feed that way and have it directly dropped into your Facebook feed. And anybody that would like to spread our name around, we definitely would appreciate it. And let everybody know, especially the librarians within your community, we definitely want them to know about us. The tips and tricks, we will actually have a separate page for that. We also have show notes where we put the covers as well as ordering information for the titles we discuss. If you don't catch it on our direct feed, we do have a show note link where you can get into the archive and get the ordering information that way, as well as other links on our site that you can get into. And I think that's all for this go-around, guys. Appreciate you coming in. Everybody enjoy the rest of the week.
Hey, you too, Richard. You have a good week.
Thanks, Richard. Appreciate it.
All right. Have a good one, everybody, and we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
I can see it all so clear. Say, but now it's bye-bye to my thinking. Now that my thinking's gone, I got nothing to say. Determination, I know that I have got to persist. Just gotta keep on anticipating, cause it's surely the moment that I don't wanna miss. And what I'm trying
Thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library. We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use on our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any comic book publisher or distributor and is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official site links of review publishers can be found on our website, www.comicpoplibrary.com. The views and comments of the Comic Pop Library host are not necessarily endorsed by the Finney County Public Library, Kearney County Library, Northeast Kansas Library System, and our Tokonganoxie Public Library.